Mr. Godwin, Reel 8. Now, we're talking about when you got to Fargo Barracks in Boston, and this is where you were picking up your ship. We'll come back to the ship if you don't mind, but can we talk about what life was like ashore, so to speak, and how you got on with the Americans, both the hospitality you had, what you did in the evening for recreation, and any trouble you had with the American sailors, or anything else?
Yeah. Well, as far as Fargo Barracks are concerned, naturally, as you can understand, it was only sleeping quarters and food, just like one of our own shore establishments. But for our social life, we used to go out of the barracks quite a lot. We weren't confined to the barracks in any way. And we can go out when we wanted and how we wanted, but we had to be dressed in full uniform. As far as the Americans are concerned, they was very sociable to us. They did anything they could. And we used to go, like they used to direct us to any places that we found of enjoyment. We was given tickets to go pictures and various places. And one of the things we had in Boston was what was known as a buddies club. And they used to send us down as a buddies club. We used to go in there. And you only had to go to the receptionist. And they would end up and they would give you, just ask them if there was anything going, and sometimes they say, well, there's a party going on at so-and-so and so-and-so. What's the party for? Well, their son is joining the Marines or such like, going in the forces, and they're throwing a party. Well, they used to give us a couple of 10-cent pieces, which was known as a dime, for our railway fare and the directions to go. But we used to go, and it was free beer, that's what we went for. We used to go down there, have a good time. And we was always welcomed. As soon as they saw what they called a limey walk in, they welcomed us with open arms. And the person who was going in the forces, always, especially if he was going in the Navy, what was it like at sea? One of the main problems, what was it like? Would I be seasick? Well, that never affected me because I was never seasick. But some of the lads used to answer him as to what they want, and naturally they'd give them a bit of a sad story. It was a terrible life. Get out while you can. That was all going on. But we enjoyed it. But when it came to the end of the party, 9 times out of 10, if there was, no matter how many parties we went to, it was always Dad took us back to our barracks. We never used that 10-cent piece to go back on train. They always took us back.
Now, what and about the dance hall? Because you used to go to the lighthouse, was
yeah,
it?
And some yeah, well, I'll come to that.
Okay.
But we was introduced to dance hall, and as soon as we walked in, the girls was over us because they wanted to, as you can gather, they didn't do such things as quick steps and all that, and they wanted to learn off of us chaps of doing quick steps and the Charleston and everything else, so they used to swarm over us blokes. But it come to a stage where we did used to go out. There was 6 of us used to go out together. But one of them was an officer. He was a lieutenant from the lower deck. Well, he used to borrow one of my uniforms. He used to go ashore. I'd take a uniform with me. We'd go into a toilet somewhere, change out of his uniform, put on one of mine because I was the same size as him, and the 6 of us went together. Well, we ended up, we were told about this lighthouse in Scully Square.
That's a dance hall. It was a dance hall.
Yeah. Well, we went, and this actually, although it's called a lighthouse, it was actually shaped like a lighthouse. You had to go up a spiral staircase to get to the dance hall and the bar. Well, we've gone up there, and you, the bar to go to, they used to come to the cubicles to serve you drink. And a young girl came along there and took our order. There were six of us, with a cubicle held eight people. And there were six of us. She must have gone back and told a few of her friends, and a couple of more girls came round and sat there, up come our drinks. And we were sitting there talking, and all of a sudden, we had a Scotsman with us, and he was a singer. He started singing all these Scottish songs. Then he went on to the Cockney songs. So we've all joined in, because the other five of us were all Cockney. So we've all joined in with him. That caused a load of the girls who was on the dance floor coming round that cubicle. They didn't know the words of the song, but they were trying to keep up with us. And we was enjoying this. And being it was all single, come in here, sitting on our laps, and they're all having a go. And then the girls, when Jock finished his singing, they started pulling us up to go on the dance floor. We get on the dance floor, and when we're on this dance floor, we noticed that all the Yankee servicemen were forming a ring right round the dance hall. And we spotted what was going to go on. They was gradually moving in on us. They were going to crowd us in. So what we did, two of our lads were ex-boxers. They were amateur heavyweight boxers. And one of them, I remember Frankie Lamb, he turned around and he says, "Red House, you and Happy go to the staircase." So we dumped the girls. I've gone to the top of the stairs. Happy, he's gone halfway down the stairs. Next we saw was a rumpus going on inside the hall. And these two heavyweight boxers were just throwing them through the door. As they come through the door, I pushed them, kicked or pushed them down the stairs. Happy's halfway down, he helped them to the bottom. After that episode, that lasted for about half an hour. The patrols walked in, so the servicemen backed off, left us alone.
Were the army or navy?
Navy. It was all the navy was patrols. You never saw army patrols. It was always navy.
No, I mean, sorry, the American.
All the servicemen was there, all of them. It was army and navy. Well, then when we went back to the lighthouse, any time we went back, and we went to a cubicle, the girls who knew us used to come round there. Jock would start singing again, and the girls were getting to learn the songs. But they loved the Cockney songs. Well, get on the dance floor. The Yankee servicemen backed off. They never formed no more rings after the last episode. But we was welcomed after that, because they knew that we weren't there for trouble. We was only going there to enjoy ourselves, and that was it.
Now, what about your new ship? Because you were introduced to the HMS Fitzroy while you were there, weren't you?
Yeah.
Now, what were your first impressions of the Fitzroy? It was this new captain's class ship. It was a very new...
It was a brand new ship to the British Navy. Well, when we first saw it, we looked at the guns on there, like from the deck or from the shore. Looked at the guns and says... I turned around and says... But they were only pea shooters. They were only 3-inch guns. There was three of these, but on the front there was a 2-pounder on the bows. I said, and I happened to turn around and say to one of the lads, knowing that he had never been to sea before, I said, "Well, we've got plenty of Oerlikons on there." I said, "That's well and truly for aircraft." I said, "This is an anti-aircraft ship." I said, do nothing against ships on the surface. I said, mainly, I said, it's an aircraft, anti-aircraft ship and a submarine ship. Well, then she commissioned. She was...
Now, what do you remember the commissioning?
Same day she was launched.
What do you remember the commissioning ceremony?
Well, the commissioning ceremony was the a point of... The ship had the church pendant up. The church pendant went up. And all of a sudden the flags went up, K-553. That was the different international code flags. And the skipper, our skipper who was taking over, he met an admiral and several other people from the establishment. And there was a church service aboard, and then the ship was handed over to the Royal Navy.
Do you know the date? Do you know the date of the commissioning? Sorry, we can look it up. But
that was on the first of September.
1943.
She was launched and commissioned the same day. But I think you'll find that a lot of your archive indicates that a ship was commissioned on the 16th of September. No way, I was on there. There's a hell of a lot. I'm arguing with people over and over again on this. In fact, I'm going to meet the skipper who commissioned that ship on the Captain Class frigates.
That's fair enough. We'll go with what you say. Now, anything else about the commissioning, sir? That was it, was it?
That was it. And the ship was handed over to the Royal Navy. First things first was the skipper wanted everyone up on the forecastle for a photograph. And that was the official's handover. Well, just after the official photograph, we all had to muster on the quarter deck. And we was all allocated to what watch we was on, such as starboard or what or port. Once we got our allocation.
Now, what were you? I
was starboard watch. And in effect, when we went down below, each division of trade had their own mess decks. Like we was allocated mess decks temporary. I was in the after quarter, like in the stern, but with the other STs.
Now, what were the mess decks like? Can you describe what the aft mess deck was like?
Well, the mess deck was, they were situated, they were bunks. They were three-tier bunks up against a bulkhead that folded up. Underneath was your lockers, the three lockers. So if the bloke at the bottom was still in his bunk, you couldn't get to your locker unless you got him, turned him out.
What did you think of the bunks? Because, you know, normally it's hammocks.
There was no hammocks at all. What we had on the bunks were, we had a green baize cover, a waterproof cover. We had to spread our hammocks and our mattresses on these dunes. So when you folded of the morning, when you got out your flea bag, you had to put these green covers over them so that all the mess deck looked as though they was all green. But we used to fold them up. You only had to push one up and the others followed it. So whether you push the top one up or the middle one, but it was usually the top one because that pulled the other two up. You couldn't bring one down individual. You had to have the three down.
Now, how big were the mess decks? What was it like in there?
They were cramped. For the simple reason is, we never had tables. That was when we had a meal time. We used to sit on our lockers with a metal tray to eat our meals. And that is what happened until we went into Charleston. And the Royal Navy had mess deck tables fitted. So they was permanent, they was fixed. But other than that, there was room to move around without these tables. But when the tables went in, you lost a lot of space.
Which did you prefer?
I preferred the table. Because what we used to do was, you sit on the lockers on the back, but there was also a fixed stool on this side, so the tables was wide enough, the children. Well, we was also issued, they took away these trays because they were so big, with compartments in, and the Royal Navy issued us with china plates and cups, etc. Instead of beakers, we had cups. And that's what we preferred. We preferred the English way of eating our food, not out of a tray. So that made room on the table for us all to be there.
Tell us about the food arrangement. So first time, it was the cafeteria system at first. Tell us what it was like. How did it work, you know, with this tray and...
Well, cafeteria wasn't too bad because you had a choice of picking up what you wanted. You could go round and pick up what you want when you like, and that was okay.
And what kind of food was it?
What, in the cafeteria?
Yeah.
Oh, it is wonderful. It was wonderful food.
What sort of stuff?
Oh, as you take mornings, you had a choice of fish, egg, bacon, sausages, beans, you name it, we had it, tomatoes. There was always a wonderful range of food. And if you wanted it all, you could have it all. No one stopped you. But because you helped yourself, no one helped you. Come dinner time, you helped yourself again. The only thing that you had put on your tray was by the chefs, was your meat. They used to put your meat on so you can put your potatoes and vegetables on as you wanted. But when you got on board ship, you was mess deck meals. And we used to have to nominate a chef, a cook on the mess deck. Somebody had to be cook.
This is after it changed from cafeteria.
Once we got, as soon as we went aboard ship, there was no cafeteria. It was all done from one galley. All the cooking was done in a galley. And your cook, the person nominated as a cook on the mess deck cook, he used to have to go up and get the meals for everybody. So he used to take billy cans up to the cookhouse, to the galley. He'd collect, take 20 men, he'd ask for 20 men's foods. And they would give him the amount of meat for 20 men, the amount of potatoes for 20 men, all in different billy cans. He would dish it out when he came down. He was told how much to give to each man. And he would dish it out on the plates as you came down. Otherwise, it was always kept hot in the burner, in the steamer. So, if you was on watch and you were down late for dinner, your meal was still hot. And that cook, the mess deck cook, dished it up. No one dished it up other than him.
Now, what kind of food would you get with that? That's a general message system.
It was different to what we got in a cafeteria. It was a set meal for all the ship's company. So if it was bully beef and mashed potatoes, everyone had bully beef and mashed potatoes. If it was soy links and mashed potatoes, everyone got soy links and mashed potatoes. No one got any different to anyone else.
What was it like, though? Did you get enough of it? Was it good?
Yeah, I didn't like the cooking until everyone complained about it. Because you've got to remember there was only one chef and about three ordinary chefs, like young people just come into it.
Learning.
And there was all that, he's got a chase on these three, keeping them going. such as you do the gravy, you mash the spuds and everything else. As far as tea was concerned, there was a up forward, there was a big boiler, like a big urn, and the cook used to have to go up there and fill the large teapot for his mess deck and get his tea from there. That was all made. The only thing that wasn't there was tea and sugar. That was in the mess deck, because he used to have to go and get that every morning from the tanky, from the store. And that is our, but the food wasn't as good as when we had it in the barracks and anything like that, because they did try to go over to what we called canteen messing, whereby there was a certain amount of money allocated to the mess, and you used to have to go and buy your food. And that's when we all complained about the way the food was done. But when we went over to canteen messing, an air cook used to go up, and he might buy from the butcher a nice piece of beef, enough for the mess deck, and there'd be sufficient left over that we could have it of an evening for supper. But the point was when it got to the galley to be cooked. Nine times out of 100, you never got it on time. Yet the cook had already taken it up there at 9 o'clock in the morning. But come 12 o'clock, or half past 11 when we was at sea, the meal wasn't ready. So we went back to letting the cook we cancelled the canteen messing. But food started to improve a bit after that, because of the complaints. Because I think the officers complained and all about it, because they had the same food as us.
Now, what about the ship itself? I mean, it was quite an unusual design. I mean, they're not riveted. I mean, they were welded, weren't they? What did you think of that?
Well, that is what the old Danes, plus myself, were concerned about. We'd never been on a welded ship. All right, for the newcomers, they'd never been on any ship. And we was looking at this, is the weld going to break while we're at sea, in a rough sea? But the only rivets that I saw on that ship was the backbreaker. And that is on the, goes right across the beam of the ship, right the way round it, which is a very thick rubber gusset. And that was riveted in, and that was to take the ship as it hit the sea, like it bent. And you saw it open and close as you was at sea, if you got on a swell or rough sea. And that was the only rivets that I saw on the ship.
Now, what did you think of your thing, which was the depth charges? How were they laid out?
Well, the depth charges, we had four Z guns. That is two port, two starboard. On the stern, you had two wrecks. There were two wrecks running down the ship. But the Z guns was fired by pulling a cord. Like we had a toggle on a cord. And that's how they were fired. But on the wrecks, there was four people down on them. One on either side. But the two in the middle, they were on levers. And they had to turn the lever over to release one. And that is how it was done, because they had to turn that lever over during a pattern, what they called a pattern, which was 10 depth charges. They had to turn that lever over three times, because six charges went off the stern. But four were fired out, and they were fired out spasmodically, so that one goes out, and they all went out at different times. And over the stern, he would go out, and then I would go out. And that's how it went. It was different times. So the 10 charges went down at different periods that covered a wide range. Of course, as soon as they fired theirs, it was all right for us on the racks. We had as many as a dozen charges on each rack. But on the Z guns, as soon as they fired it, they had to get another one loaded in case they had to come back again, like we was going to drop again. And that's how it carried on.
Now, you were on familiarisation trials at very first, and then you had alterations.
But that was to get familiar with the ship. That was also to test out all their eye check. And it was also to test out the depth charges, targets, gun practice, aircraft pulling a shock, gun practice, all the gun practice. And that was a familiarisation on the ship. And that was for testing the sonar, like the Aztecs, because they would have a submarine underneath going out, and they had to fetch that, bring that submarine in, like, on their Aztecs. It was all for us all to get familiar with the equipment aboard. That was what them, and that took quite a while.
And how did it go?
Very well. Especially for some of us who had been to sea before. All right, the rookies, they were learning from us because they didn't know what it was. Such as, all right, on a familiarisation test, I was always on the quarter deck being a torpedo man and for depth charges. But when it come to the aircraft, once we finished that, I used to have to go on Y-gun.
Y-gun, which is that?
That was the after gun.
The after 3-inch?
That's it, the after 3-inch, because two forward, one aft. I used to have to go up there, and my job was to set the fuses on the shells. But that was done with a machine. As the shells was handed up, there was somebody taking them from the armoury. They was brought up, and somebody took them up, handed them to me, and I used to turn them up, put them into the machine, press a button, because the setting was done from the bridge. This is where the familiarisation come in. The setting was done from the bridge. All I had to do was put it in, press a lever, turn handle, and it was automatically set the shell for its range. Of course, they was quick-firing shells. And from that, I used to hand it to the gun, load it, they would load it, and it was up to them to fire it. And that's how it was. Well, I had one of these ODs with me.
OD?
Yeah, that's ordinary seaman, to see how it was done. And then every other one, I used to have to let him do, so that he can get familiar with setting these fuses. And then it came, we're going to set them manually. Well, you was wearing earphones, so the bridge used to say, set them for so-and-so and so-and-so range. Well, if they wouldn't put it on a machine, so you had a key to go over the top of the head of the shell, and you turned it to the range they wanted. And that is where, such as this OD in particular, he couldn't see how it was done. I said, look, all you do, pull it round until you get that mark, a zero, on the range they give you on the earphones. It took him a while, but he found out how to do it.